Disclaimer: the views and opinions expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show.
From Orange County, California, I'm Zach Virtue. Welcome to ANCAST. Joining me for this quick little segment up top, Justin Savegas. Hey, buddy.
Howdy.
How's it going? Working hard?
Yeah, work, pre-holiday, nuts, the usual.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, right up top, we should plug, we're doing holiday specials this year, just like we did last year. It's a two-part show in which we run down our personal top 10 best and top 10 worst anime of all time. In addition to top 10 and bottom 10 movies of all time. So we're doing two separate shows. That'll be interesting.
You know, although that seems like a really lazy go-to topic for us, this turned out to be really, really hard to put together.
Yeah, it's a difficult list, really, when you think about it. If you've only been an anime fan for 2 years, it's probably really easy. But doing this as long as we have,
yeah,
it's
God,
tough.
I've been watching anime for, what, 16 years now? You're probably around similar.
Yeah, it's really hard to come up with a definitive list. And I've had to go back and revisit all this stuff. Because a lot of stuff that I considered, oh, this is my all-time favorite, I'm like, well, is it still? Because I haven't seen it in 7 years. So, you know, the big thing that I was doing last week was rewatching all of Revolutionary Girl Lieutenant. That took up a big chunk of my time, and then it's kind of surprising.
39 episodes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Actually, I went to Book Off and bought that big chunk of CPM, crappy CPM discs, because there's no other place. There's no other place to get it.
I apologize on behalf of my people.
It's watchable though. I can make out the images and the words. but it's surprising to me how much of the stuff that I thought would be on my list is not.
Like what?
Specifically two shows that I really thought would be somewhere near the bottom, but on the list. Rurouni Kenshin, which I know you're not a fan. No. But it was a formative title for me back in the late 90s. And I always thought fondly back, especially on the Kyoto arc, as like, oh, that was amazing. You know, so good. And I went back and rewatched a chunk of it, and I'm like, this is totally standard shonen stuff. It's not anything remarkable. I mean, it's well written for shonen stuff, but it's not any better than the really good parts of like Naruto or anything like that. Certainly not as good as any given arc of One Piece. And the other one was Trigun, which I thought would be on there, but nope. Rewatched that when Funimation sent in the box set, and it's okay. It's all right. I think that show gets a pass because of its charismatic lead, and that's kind of it.
Yeah, to be honest, I was really gung-ho for that when it was first coming out, and somehow I realized I never watched past disc 3.
That was the same for me. Once they get into the whole gung-ho guns thing, and like every episode seems to be about a giant monster with a little guy controlling it.
Right, just, and then it gets all angsty.
Yeah, and then it gets super angsty, and they bring in all this sci-fi shit. It's just like, all right, I don't really care about the story that much. Those first like 8 episodes are fun, but after that, meh.
Right.
So yeah, not on the list. You find anything that sort of surprised you as like, wow, this isn't going on either list?
Yeah, I was actually really struggling with the worst list because it's tough because there's so much really terrible anime out there.
Yeah.
But B, a lot of the stuff that you remember is too entertaining to genuinely be part of the list.
Yeah, I would imagine Garzy's Wing is not going to be on your bottom 10.
Oh, no. We were specifically forbidding ourselves from putting on the So Bad It's Good stuff.
Yeah.
So that kills Garzy's Wing, that kills Angel Cop, that kills Mad Bull.
Yeah.
What's left?
I find that the really challenging thing, and for the worst stuff, I'm not rewatching it so much as I am watching clips and reading synopses and trying to rejigger my memory. And the worst list is stuff that is punishingly mediocre.
Yeah.
Or stuff I just really didn't react to or found myself really bored with.
I tried to just kind of categorize and have at least one title for the worst of a given category of suck.
Right. Well, anyway, those will be fun shows. They'll be, two separate shows, probably over an hour each. But hey, as you know, people have a lot of time to kill during the holidays. They seem to enjoy it last year, so that'll be fun. Although
hey,
you're
stuck on a plane for 8 hours.
Yeah. Although I have to say, the movies list was much easier for me. Like much easier. I think it's because I revisit that stuff more often.
I due to a communication snafu, I have not started.
Oh, right. Well, get working.
I know. I'm busy. I have cookies to make.
Right. So before we get to the interview, we wanted to chat a little bit. You've been sort of experiencing what it's like to deal with the new frontier of streaming shit straight to the TV. And that's an interesting thing for me because I'm totally an old school cable guy. I use my DVR. I have a expensive cable package where I get everything in HD and all that stuff. And it's super easy and an elegant solution in my mind. But things are really changing. And you, as a guy who kind of has to develop streaming video applications for this new frontier, are really experiencing something. So what's going on out there?
Well, I am experiencing confusion and angst. It's basically, you know, there are many different kinds of TV viewer, but I think we are different. Like, you're kind of traditional, I watch everything on cable, everything that's either popular or outstanding in quality. I barely watch anything that would be on cable. Like, right. I'm maybe watching three or four shows at any given time. Half of them are on network. And the rest I'm watching either off disc or off Netflix or, you know, it's anime, which simply doesn't show up on cable, or at least not to the extent that it needs to for someone like us.
Yeah.
So for people like me and for other people who are like interested in cutting the cord, as the catchphrase is, there are more and more solutions now for getting streaming stuff onto your big TV with a remote control interface that, you know, you can actually putz around and watch the stuff. And the most visible player in all this is Netflix, but they're kind of being as platform agnostic as possible. So now there are like at least five or six different platforms that can be supported by streaming, each with its own little set of rules and technical standards and things that work, things that don't work, and trying to support, A, figuring out which ones to support, and B, trying to support them is, it's daunting, but it's kind of fun in a, I feel like, an adventurer sort of way.
So for an anime fan, and Lord knows anime fans are non-traditional media consumers.
Oh, indeed.
Yeah. So I would imagine that this is an attractive option for a lot of anime fans, streaming stuff straight to your TV. And given the sheer number of solutions that are out there, which one, in your opinion, is the best one right now for an anime fan?
They're all a little undercooked at this point, to be honest.
Okay.
A lot of people are squeaking by with their game console, be it PS3 or Xbox. But both of those have serious limitations. They're really locked down systems. The third, honestly, for the hardcore anime fan, right now the best solution is the Boxy. Or Boxy, which is either software, or the Boxy Box, which is a little $200 piece of hardware. And it's really nice because it's meant to work with a web page rather than dig deep down into the web page and hook in under the surface.
Mm-hmm.
So that means it's really easy to develop for, because we don't have to do anything, you know, deep. We just have to kind of program a skin for it. So Crunchyroll already has an app for it, and it's actually a pretty nice app. They've kept it up. And it's built on Xbox Media Center. Not sure if you remember that.
Yeah, I do. That was the for the original Xbox. You could hack it to turn it into a media streaming center.
Right, and a bunch of anime nerds used to use that to play their fan subs.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is kept up, and now it plays HD. And it so this little box will lets you straddle the edge of legality, where I'm sure everyone has a nice pile of fan subs in addition to, you know, the stuff they enjoy legally. This lets you kind of have the best of both worlds.
Hmm.
Kind of filling that same niche as when you first got an iPod and like, I have all these illicit MP3s, but I'll start buying stuff too.
Right. It just makes it easier.
It does. It's a nice little bridge. I wish it was built into a Blu-ray player. And I'm told they're working on that, and they're also working on Netflix. When the Boxy Box first came out a couple weeks ago, it was indescribably buggy. They clearly rushed this thing out for Christmas. It's not done, but they're working really hard on it. So, like I said, best solution, still not fully baked.
But if you're an anime fan interested in legit streaming.
Oh, yeah, totally. And, you know, it plays everything else, too. It has a built-in web browser. It automatically gets, like, The Daily Show and pulls from a bunch of different websites. Unfortunately, all of these set-top boxes are pretty much being blocked by the network, so you're not going to get, like, ABC, CBS, or anything on them.
Yeah, well, that's a problem. And that's one of the reasons I still prefer cable, at least for, you know, my normal TV viewing, because it's one tube that has everything. I don't have to go through three different services to watch MTV or Comedy Central or NBC. You know, I want all that in one place. I want my TV watching to be a thing of ease and not of effort.
Well, my bad. Hulu Plus will be on the boxy box before we know it. And even though people are balking at paying for Hulu Plus, it's still, you know, it's not a whole lot when compared to cable.
Well, yeah, no shit. Cable's really expensive.
Cable's really expensive, and honestly, it's just not worth it for a lot of people, especially if mostly what you watch is anime.
Yeah, well, for sure, yeah. There's not jack shit for anime on cable unless you watch Sci-Fi Channel, and that's kind of it.
There's some other options on the horizon, but all of them are fairly far from complete. You got Google TV, which really only works very well with YouTube right now. but that's being built into new Sony TVs. You got Samsung with their own little proprietary thing, but should work kind of like boxy. I don't know. Then you have LG with their own little platform that I don't know how that's going to work. You have Roku, which it's the cheapest. It's probably the most user-friendly, but doesn't support ads.
Bye-bye, business plan. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, at some point, maybe somebody will support it. But you kind of have to reinvent the wheel for it. And I have to support the iPhone at some point.
Fun.
Yeah, that's another platform you have to completely reinvent the wheel for. This field is an utter mess right now, and I can't wait for like 2 or 3 years from now for it all to be shook out and there'd be declared winners. I only have to support one platform instead of eight. If there's one saving grace in all of this, it's that about half of them kind of support what we've been doing so far, so I don't have to completely reinvent the wheel.
Well, best of luck on that. At least it's better than just straight data entry.
Marginally. it's a fun problem to solve, honestly, because, you know, I as much fun as I have getting the content on PCs and having people watch it on PCs, anime is best on a big plasma TV.
That's true.
It really is.
Indeed. All right, dude. Well, let's go ahead and get to the interview.
Return of the Jedi. The Rebel Command Force is captured by the Ewoks. What fate awaits them in the model Ewok village? The Ewoks line up their captives as Chief Chirper arrives in the lift. Han Solo is turned on the spit. No one can reach the Ewok village protected by the swinging boulder. Can C-3PO save his friends? Only you can decide with Star Wars toys.
All right, joining me now is Chase Wang from BAM Marketing, formerly of Anime Expo, and currently working at AM Squared, which is a new convention that's popping up in Anaheim next summer. And we're going to get to that in a minute, but Chase, thanks for joining me.
Oh, you're totally welcome, Zach. Thanks for inviting me. This is a fantastic opportunity.
No problem. So, most people know you from Anime Expo, and you ran that show. Basically, were in charge of that show for... what was it, 3 or 4 years?
Actually, 5 or 6.
5 or 6, okay.
Yes.
And eventually it got to the point where, you were really on top of that show. I don't think I've known anybody who was quite as involved in running every cog at a convention as you were in Anime Expo. You were really involved in that show for a number of years. I guess just to start, like, what was that like being in the middle of that tornado for so long?
It was quite an experience. I learned a lot from it. Being part of every little bit of a convention shows you a lot of different aspects of the convention, and allows you to help create a convention that is unique and caters, hopefully, to the needs and desires of the attendees.
Right. And did over that time period, because you were basically steward of Anime Expo during the bubble, the anime bubble that has since burst, did you notice the needs of the attendees changing over the years?
Most definitely. There were definite changes, going from the hardcore anime fans who wanted rare, pieces from Japan or whatever it was, to the inclusion of a new generation of anime fans who may not necessarily know as much culturally about Japanese animation, but they were very, very hungry for it, but they had a much higher need to learn about what was out there and what Japanese culture and animation and manga all encompassed.
Right. Now, did you notice that, and this has been my experience, and I've been going to Anime Expo for like 11 years now, did you notice in your time there that the demographics changed, got younger, and the attendees were a little less interested in anime over the years? Because that's certainly the impression that I got.
Well, I think, everyone has their opinions of where the fan base was heading. And, definitely you still have your hardcore fans from, many, many, many years of devotion. But then you also have the younger, of course, as you grow in the industry in years, you definitely will start attracting newer fans. And sometimes, majority of the times, it's usually younger fans because they learn from word of mouth through their friends what's cool and what's happening. And the interest, I would say, didn't wane so much from anime, but more so they all had a love for animation and manga, but they went for the camaraderie, mm-hmm. for their friendships, to make new friends, to meet new people who enjoyed cosplaying, for example. It was a huge thing at the convention, and most definitely at the new convention, AM Squared, we definitely have a lot of activities for cosplayers to partake in.
Right, okay. So they sort of came for the anime, stayed for the party, effectively.
Basically, yeah. And I think, it is a celebration in itself, not just of animation and manga and Japanese anime, but also of music. It was a celebration of themselves as people who enjoyed this genre that, many people beforehand thought was a little off or a little strange before. But now as it creeps into the mainstream even more so through Cartoon Network and Adult Swim and all that, it's becoming more of an acceptable medium in mainstream.
What would you say your biggest headache was at Anime Expo over, any given year? Was there one event that sticks out in your mind as like, oh God, never again?
That's a very, very loaded question, Zach.
I'm just curious. Hey, you're not working there anymore. You can tell some stories.
Well, I mean, I can say that, there were trying times at times, connecting, the U.S. base of their interests with the interests of the industry and such like that. So there was definitely sometimes there was a headache there because there's a cultural difference between, the Japanese mindset and mentality and business culture versus the U.S. mindset and business culture. So sometimes trying to get them to meet and to understand each other was a bit difficult. But, it worked itself out. Things happened for a reason. And I think that was one of the hardest things to do. For something that I would never do again, I think would have to deal with – well, actually, I haven't had to deal with it ever since. I dealt with it. It was a situation with Manfei.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there was a situation where I believe in Anaheim that, in previous years, he would come and he was very upset with, how he was treated and all that kind of deal. And I had a one-on-one with him and explained to him, where my position was with the whole situation. And he understood where I came from, and ever since then, never an issue. And, he's always been a really, really positive guy from what I've, from what I've gathered from my interactions with him. He just has to make sure that things are put away properly in his costumes. That's all.
Just for people who may not know, Manfei is a sort of somewhat famous cosplayer. I wouldn't really call it. It's more of a stunt that this guy does where he dresses up in a skimpy Faye Valentine costume and hangs around basically the front of Anime Expo, or at least he used to. I haven't seen him in years, but I think he was banned, right?
He was banned at first, but then I kind of, spoke to him about things because he was, even though in a convention setting, you know, you may be banned from coming in, you can still hang out in the outskirts.
Yeah.
And that's what he was doing in the previous years. He was banned before I came on board. And when I, noticed what he was doing, I mean, I respected the ban from the past and all that, but when I learned about certain things popping out of his costumes and, you know, there are children there, and, you know, and I basically explained to him in a very, polite manner that, you know, if it was his children that were at the event and there was an individual that was doing the same thing that he was, would he like it? You know, mm-hmm. would he want to subject his children to it? I think that struck a chord with him, and he understood. And, you know, I believe him when he says that he didn't mean for things to, you know, leak out. Because, I mean, sometimes you don't know. And, you know, and I think that he, you know, took it to heart. And he actually, you know, did something about it, and he understood. And it wasn't, like, a big retaliation anymore, like, you know, F Anime Expo anymore. It was more of, like, he understood at that point.
Yeah, I don't think I've seen him in a couple of years, but then again, that joke is way old now. I think maybe he's hopefully he's moved on with his life. You can't dedicate yourself to doing the same stunt year after year.
That's true, but you know, sometimes you know they're infamous, and so you know they pop up here and there for nostalgia or whatever it is. I remember seeing Sailor Bubba once, and I was like shocked, you know, because I hadn't seen him for years either.
Same kind of stunt. there was one sort of infamous year that you were totally in charge of. That was 2007, which was the big sort of blow up in Long Beach, where just nothing seemed to go right. Sort of a comedy of errors down there. And one thing I was sort of curious about in terms of like, wow, this was a nightmare, we're not going to do it again, was you had the big debut of Skin, which was intended to be this like super group of Japanese visual K idols or whatever that formed a group, and it was kind of, I mean, a nightmare from the crowd's perspective. Certainly, what I mean, that had to have been a gigantic headache if so much went wrong.
Well, you know, I think certain things happen for certain reasons. It was, and I wouldn't downplay it at all. It was kind of like a comedy of errors, but I believe at that time there was a huge disconnect. I wasn't running the entire thing at that time per se. I was a third party individual coming in to help them out,
right?
And they have always had a convention chair, convention vice chair, and you know, CEO and all that kind of deal. That whole situation was pretty much behind the scenes issues
mm-hmm.
that occurred. I mean, I definitely felt awful for the fans that were lining up and they went into the arena and, you know, waited 2.5-3 hours for, you know, a concert. You know, I mean, in some ways, I think that's also a cultural disconnect at that point as well for a situation like that, because in Japan, sometimes it's very regular that, artists will delay their appearance, you know, for X amount of hours just to create anticipation. But, you know, whereas in the American mindset, that's not really seen as something as desirable because that usually upsets people.
Well, yeah.
And I think some Japanese artists are learning from that, and now they're performing more and more on time, which is fantastic. You know, so I mean, I do feel it was quite a situation, but I think the fans overall enjoyed seeing, you know, all the amazing, you know, artists from Japan, you know, the rock gods, basically, all on one stage. And, you know, and of course, at the end, obliterating basically all the instruments on stage and, you know, having shards of guitars flying everywhere and things like that, which, you know, I was horrified with because I kept thinking, insurance.
Yeah, you're going to get sued.
You know, and what if, like, a piece shot into someone's eyeball or something like that, you know? I mean, there was tons of fear going through my head at that point. But, I mean, it turned out fine. and no one was hurt, so that was the best thing out of it for me, I guess.
Were those, I mean, that, after that debut, I mean, they're not still touring as Skin anymore. I don't think I heard anything from them again after that. Like, single, not an album, nothing. Like,
well, you know, you never know. I mean, that could have been, you know, that was definitely a feather in AX's hat that, you know, I had worked on to bring in. And, you know, I don't think anybody else can ever say that they will ever have a debut like that, that has all these, you know, amazing musicians from Japan, you know, who are, you know, famous for in their own right and are amazing musicians as well, to all be on one stage and perform once. I mean, it's their one and only performance ever as Skin right now. And who knows? You know, they might end up doing something later on. You never know, especially when it comes to, you know, Yoshiki. Yoshiki is an amazing artist. I mean, I've worked with him for a while, and he is brilliant. And you never know. He always surprises me, even though I may sometimes feel like I know him.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden he pulls something out that makes me think, what? What are you thinking again? Can you run that by me again?
did your experience working with bands at Anime Expo, is that part of it? Because you handle marketing and publicity for X Japan now, right?
I do a lot of stuff for X Japan, yes, as well as Yoshiki, as well as other clients as well, both in the anime and manga world, as well as outside in gaming, in mainstream entertainment, through theatrical releases, home entertainment releases, you know, and things like that. But yeah, it is what it is. You know, it's a job that I enjoy doing. Most importantly, I really enjoyed my work with the staff and the volunteers. You know, I mean, granted that I can't please everyone, and, you know, I'm pretty sure that, you know, there's some, you know, staff or even volunteers that may not know me as well, and they may hear things, and, you know, and who knows if they're true or not, may have like a different, I guess, different interpretation of who I really am, without getting to know me. And sometimes it's hard to swallow something like that for me. You know, I even heard about that recently, so it was very, very weird.
Oh, so this is, I mean, now this is, after however many years, after 6-7 years, obviously you had a falling out with the organization. They brought in a CEO that, of course, doesn't work there anymore after one show. They got rid of Lisanzio. And so this is obviously an ongoing thing, and I know you can't really comment too much on it for legal reasons. But what can you say about that whole, that what went down there? Because that was a real sudden and violent ousting, as it were.
Well, you know, I mean, I feel that as a person, as a third-party consultant, I've never, throughout this whole situation, I've never demanded nor requested to be reinstated. You mm-hmm. know, to me, an organization with their leadership can pick and choose whoever they want to work with.
Mm-hmm.
And if that management team felt that I was incapable of providing anything of substance to the organization, to the event, then by all means, you know, they have every right to remove me and from the picture. So, you know, and I think they felt that was the right thing for them at that point. I think they've learned a lot. I think they still need to learn a lot more. I think that there will be an ongoing learning process for everyone, including myself. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I can't speak for them. I can only speak for me in this sense that I've learned about things in ways of what I would like for this new convention to be more like. I want it to be more fan-friendly. I want it to be more industry-friendly. I want it to be more press and, you know, exhibitor-friendly as well. You know, I want it to be – I want AM Square to be a place where, you know, the industry can continue to thrive from, where we can bring in new audiences to appreciate the genres of animation, of Asian music, of manga and all that kind of deal. to help stimulate the industry so it can continue to grow in some aspect or sustain itself, but also a place where, you know, the fans who both cosplay and don't cosplay can feel safe to do so, have a lot of fun doing it, enjoy their time, you know, instead of taking X amount of dollars to purchase, you know, admission, I would rather have those fans come to our event and take that money and go into the exhibit hall, get something for themselves, and help, you know, the retailers sustain themselves, you know, so that they can continue to bring in more products to the U.S. For the fans themselves, you know?
Okay, right.
That's what I'd like to see.
Okay, well, let's start on that. This was a different event last year. It was called, same company, right, but it was called Club to the Max, and it was in the Staples Center across the street from Anime Expo.
It was at Club Nokia.
Club Nokia, right. Well, same basic pavilion, but so what was the idea last year? What was the thinking behind this event?
Well, the thought of this event was more of, in all honesty, I didn't come up with the idea.
Right.
It came from several Japanese individuals that approached me that wanted a place to present their brands to the U.S. audience
without working with AX.
I believe they had attempted to work with the organization, but I don't know exactly what happened with that. All I can say is that they came to me afterwards,
okay,
to help them, you know, find a place, organize the event for them, and, you know, take it to a position where they could get as much attention as possible, which I think I did, you know, with the team's help of my incredible staff of volunteers, because honestly, without, you know, people like Joe Wu, K-chan, you know, Durf, Miko, Angela, I mean, there's a whole slew of people I can't even stop, you know, I can't even give you the whole list because the list is immense, that, you know, it wouldn't have even happened because there's no way that one person could have done that whole thing by themselves.
Okay, right. Okay, so, but what was the goal there then? Was a bunch of Japanese companies who weren't going to get any exposure for their properties at AX decided, well, let's throw a party across the street from the biggest anime convention in the country and maybe siphon off or offer a secondary attraction to the people that are going in.
Well, you know, we looked at different areas. You know, it wasn't intentionally, deliberately done in that way. The areas that we're looking at were the Aratani Theater in Little Tokyo. We looked at a place up in Pasadena. We looked at, you know, the Shrine Auditorium. We looked at several different places to do it. And we found and we figured that the best place with the best financial approach for the best deal was LA Live at Club Nokia. So that was purely a business decision, and that wasn't a decision that I made on my own. All I did as a consultant was provide the specs, the quotes, and everything like that to my clients, and they made their choice at that point.
Right. Well, I mean, it wasn't exactly a coincidence, but it does make sense if that's the audience that you're targeting because they're already all across the street.
Correct. And I believe, to basically answer that point is that if you look at some of the news around some of the items that we were working on, you will note that about a month prior, they had announced that they were doing something around that time frame in Los Angeles. And so therefore those were also the parameters that I had to work with as well.
Right. And then, so the events you had last year were mostly some musical acts. I believe you had some Power Rangers show up, and yet a few anime related events, right?
We had, some anime cafe,
right.
That was run. It was a really fun event for a lot of people that showed up. They got to play games. They had, like, catered food from Wolfgang Puck. You know, we had several other things, like, you know, the Whose Line Is It Anime's show. There was some, we were giving out free things left and right. We were giving away free balloons. We were giving away Pocky. We were giving away Gundams. We were giving away a whole bunch of toys, a whole bunch of animes, DVDs, manga books, just for people who came. I mean, it was just more of a celebration for us that, you know, we wanted to make it a fun event for people, and I think people gravitated towards it.
Right, and admission was free, but you had to pay to get into certain events, right?
Correct. That there was some pay because of the anime cafe, for example. You know, there was the food overhead, so we had to try to cover that cost.
Right.
And you know, for the film, you know, itself, we had to charge an admission to as well. But it was basically a fantastic deal because not only did you get to see, you know, the film, but you also got to meet the star, Irina Mano, as well as have her perform a couple songs and do an autograph session as well.
Right. So, oh, and the film was that Japanese horror flick.
Yes,
right?
Okay. It was Kaiki.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean, it was a good film. I think it takes a person who understands the Japanese culture and Japanese film mentality to actually appreciate the film, because sometimes some of the, I guess some of the meanings gets lost in translation because the cultural difference, mm-hmm. you know?
Right. And so this model, after being deemed a success last year, I have no idea how you measured that. I mean, obviously you took attendance and you know, maybe broke even, went into the black. I don't know. How did that work out?
Well, I mean, to answer that question, because I've seen that everywhere. People are like saying, how did we do and all that kind of deal, and how did we measure? Well, let me set the record straight. We did measure attendance. We worked with Club Nokia for and we had clicks. We clicked unique individuals coming in to all the events. We also incorporated ticket sales because those are all unique as well for each event. And, you know, we did a rough estimation of what it was. Based upon those numbers, and basically what we gathered was that we had over 7,000 unique attendees that came. Granted that there might have been like maybe, I want to say 8,500 maybe in multiples, mm-hmm. but majority of it was unique.
Okay, and so then the decision then was to take this model of a sort of convention where you don't pay an entrance fee, and now you have, I would say, wisely changed the name to AM Squared. Now, what does that mean?
Well, you know, granted that, you know, Zach, I know that you've always had an issue with Club to the Max, that name. I've even read about it. And honestly, the reason why that name came about, let me clarify, was that, first of all, it was at Club Nokia. Mm-hmm. And second of all, M at that time stood for Irina Mano, A stood for the Anime Cafe, and X stood for the evening event of X Japan. And that's how we came up with that name originally. Now, AM Squared is a new group, a new name, basically, which, you know, incorporated the input from all the staff that are currently with the group right now. And we sat down in a room and figured out what would be a great name that would be appropriate, you know. And the name that came up was AM Squared, and that stands for animation, music, and manga. And so the M is the squared aspect of it. So I thought it was very, very clever of them. And, you know, I thought it was fantastic. So we voted on it. It was very democratic, and we moved forward with it, and it was fantastic.
Okay. And so how many days is this event?
It is a three-day event. It'll be July 1st through the 3rd at the Anaheim Convention Center. It is 24 hours as well. Granted that the exhibit hall will not be 24 hours, but we will have 24-hour programming as well as some events in the evenings, of course, with our dances, with the arcade being 24 hours, with some of the viewing rooms being 24 hours and things like that.
Okay, so same weekend as Anime Expo, in Anime Expo's former location, same audience, same intended audience as Anime Expo. So this isn't a competing convention that you've launched in direct competition with Anime Expo.
Are you stirring up drama, Zach?
Oh, come on. You can't deny it, man. You can't deny it. It's like, that would be like launching San Diego Comic Book Show at the San Diego Hilton on the same weekend. Like, you know, come on.
Let me clarify this, because I actually read the forums and I actually read a lot of this stuff, and I kind of think that it's kind of interesting how people come up with some of these ideas. But let me set the record straight on this, that we had looked at, you know, at many different convention centers, including Long Beach, which I didn't like. But, you know, Long Beach, Pasadena. We even looked at L.A. as well,
mm-hmm.
As well as Anaheim. And, you know, we wanted to keep it in the Southern California area. And during the summer dates, and, you know, I had talked with the staff, and they suggested several different dates. And we attempted to try every single one of those dates at all the venues. And usually there was some type of conflict. Either the convention center wasn't available, or it was and the hotels weren't available, or vice versa. And for you know, reasons, whether people want to interpret it as fortunate or not, or intentional or not, the Anaheim Convention Center was available, as well as two of the hotels. And it was only available during that time frame. So, you know, it wasn't something that was planned out, you know, to be done in a vicious manner or whatever it was. Because I see it written in those forms that people think that it was, you know, plotted by, you know, me or whatever it was. And rest assured, I mean, I don't know if this, for me saying this, will even change people's minds, but it wasn't done in a planned out manner in that sense. It was just a fortunate situation that at that point, those dates were the only ones that were available for both the convention center as well as the hotels.
Well, it certainly contradicts everything we've been hearing about the Anaheim Convention Center, because for years, nobody really wanted AX to move away from Anaheim. Everybody liked Anaheim. And then we kept being told, like, oh, the Anaheim Convention Center is booked for the next 6 years straight. We can't get it. And then you guys sort of swoop in and somehow managed to get that weekend. So it's not like AX couldn't have moved back to Anaheim, which I know, I mean, a lot of people would have preferred.
I mean, well, they possibly, but who knows if they, you know, I don't know their deals or whatever it is, for, you know, the LA Convention Center of, you know, of the years of the contracts or whatever it is. That's something that you'd have to ask, you know, the heads there.
Well, they made it pretty clear. They're like, well, we don't want to move back to Anaheim. And I guess the reasoning is that the fantasy land that is downtown Los Angeles is much preferable to being next door to Disneyland. I guess that's what their argument is.
Well, I hope that works out for them. I mean, for me, and this is an exclusive I will give ANN on this, is that for, you know, people who are interested in attending AM Squared, you know, we do have some things that we're putting together for the attendees that come. You know, we've already announced, you know, the summer festival, the participation of, you know, the Rum Party Pirates, which is non-alcoholic.
Well, that doesn't sound like,
know,
very much fun.
And all that. But we're also doing a huge deal, well, I am, with Disneyland.
Interesting.
So, you know, stay tuned for more on that. But there will be a huge, and I do mean huge, deal that I'm doing with Disneyland just for our attendees.
Oh, that's cool. Speaking of the attendees, so obviously AX sort of has a finite audience. The Southern California area has sort of been sapped. I mean, they seem like they've kind of peaked at about 40,000 folks, 35,000-40,000 folks. It's been a little flat. Attendance growth has been a little flat. It's still really good, but it's been a little flat. Are you hoping to siphon off part of that audience? Are you hoping people stop by AM Squared on their way to Anime Expo? I mean, you're looking at a finite crowd here. And you've got pretty much the same, it's the same audience, same demographic.
Oh, well, you know, honestly, I don't think we're in the same boat per se. I do believe that there are crossovers, number one.
Right.
You have to understand that AM Squared is not just only Japanese. You know, we're also looking at, you know, talent from other regions as well as possibles. You know, because I think, you know, there is so much talent in Asia, period, that, you know, that people have, you know, people know about, and, you know, it's a fantastic opportunity for people to see that. But also, that our situation is that our event is basically free. You know, And when you have a situation like this, and there are people who are on the fence, per se, to come to an event or not come to an event, now there's no reason to not come and see what it's all about. Because there isn't, you know, the problem or the issue for some people of, you know, $55, $95 for an entrance fee. You know, and I think that opens the doors also for a lot of students who are, you know, who appreciate the art, and they want to come out and hang out and dress up and have fun, but they don't necessarily have the funds for it. So basically, this to me is more of a continuing celebration of what happened earlier this year.
Okay, right. And obviously, you're trying to make it more attractive to vendors, because I saw you've announced you're paying what are you paying, the drayage fees or something for exhibitors coming into the exhibit hall?
Yeah, actually, we have a huge amount of benefits for exhibitors. Like I said, one of the big things that I learned was that I wanted to make AM Squared an event that was very exhibitor friendly as well, in which, you know, I sat down with our decorators and, you know, union people and all that kind of deal, and we struck a deal. And basically, you know, we have much lower rates for that they're used to for convention booths, which is huge for, you know, because I feel like if they don't have to pay as much, they'll probably make more money, number one.
And they'll go to your event instead of Anime Expo.
Number two, we are taking care of their drayage fees, which means all their everything that they bring in to the convention center, to the exhibit hall, which usually has been weighed and charged. You know, there was an individual who had told me that they had participated in a different convention, and they had paid like maybe $2,000 or $3,000 in drayage fees, and I was shocked by that. And so basically, in these times, in these economic times, I don't think you can you know, do that to people, even when there wasn't any you know, bad economic times. You shouldn't be doing that to people as well. So, you know, we struck a deal with the union people, and that, you know, that all of the drayage moving in and moving out for our exhibitors will not be charged, will not be weighed. They will be able to bring in items on dollies instead of by hand, in which in the past a lot of exhibitors have had to bring in things by hand. And walking on concrete back and forth is very, very taxing, not only on the legs but on the back. We'll also be providing some dollies as well for people to utilize on a first-come, first-served basis.
Right.
And so, you know, we're trying to make it as accommodating for our exhibitors as much as possible, and right, make it friendly for them so that they can grow with us and enjoy the fact that, you know, these attendees, what I want is for them to come in, and instead of spending all that money on, you know, on admission, you know, to take that money, you know, and apply it to something in the exhibit hall.
Interesting. And okay, so you've established that you think, although you're claiming there's no direct competition, I mean, I don't buy that for a second, but you're sort of battling for the attendees at this point. But let me finish.
Correct that, Zach. I mean, I'm not saying that there is no direct competition. I think it'd be foolish to say that there is no competition, period, among any of the anime conventions, regardless if they share the dates or not. You're competing for, you know, you're competing for attendees, number one. You know, right, because basically attendees have a finite number of dollars that they can spend to go to any event, whether it's on the 4th of July weekend, earlier or before. People sometimes have to, you know, kind of figure out, should I take my money and spend it at Fanime, or should I go into Anime Expo, or should I go to AM Squared, or whatever it is. But then there are individuals that have a lot of, you know, disposable income that they can go to all these conventions as well. So there is some direct competition there as well, but it's not just between AM Squared and AX. There's also, you know, the issues of sponsorship dollars. You know, you're always in competition for that. You're also in competition for exhibitors. Granted that our exhibitors do cross over with Anime Expos, but they're not the only ones that we're having to exhibit at our event. You know, there's a lot of different ways of looking at competition, and definitely, like I said, it would be foolish to think that, you know, that these two conventions are not competing in any sense. But it's also foolish to not even consider that all conventions are competing against each other.
You're right, but for the same audience on the same weekend in the same area is a little, well, you know, honestly, a little more direct than usual.
I think there are crossovers, but I think you're missing my point, which is that, you know, although there are crossovers, we are more open to a different audience as well.
Right. Okay.
An audience that may not be able to afford, you know, paying $85 for an admission or whatever it was.
Right. Okay.
Or even, you know, $25.
But okay, right. But the point I was sort of trying to make was that while you are, you know, you're opening it up to a broader audience and also, you know, maybe siphoning some folks away from AX, there's only a certain number of exhibitors, certainly a certain amount of industry presence, and even press. Like, I have to make a choice next year whether or not I go to one or the other. And it's the same right. It's the same for everybody who's in press or industry. Well, you know, like, Funimation can't go to both events. They got to pick one, you know?
Correct. And I think, you know, to me, I think it comes down to what is offered at the table. And I think if people see AM Squared as something that is more appealing, they will come. I think if, you know, regardless of what we bring or what the other party brings, it comes down to a personal choice. And, you know, I can't, you know, force people to go anywhere, or nor do I want to. I want to, you know, as well as the staff that I have, they want to put on a show that people will enjoy and people will have fun with. And I respect that and I applaud that. You know, and I think Anaheim is only, what, 20, 30 minutes away from downtown L.A.
It's like 45 minutes in traffic. More than that. It's like two hours in bad traffic. But correct. I'd say about 40 minutes. I mean, make that drive all the time.
There's
going to
be traffic during that weekend. Yeah. I mean, most people are leaving this town anyways. But I think that, you know, if people, and especially in the sense of social media, you brought up Facebook, Twitter, you know, I mean, definitely people will be tweeting, people will be talking about what's going on both sides of the pond, basically, I guess. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll have an event that will be very fun, that will be very reasonable, very attractive to people. Because I think if you build something that is honest and comes from a place of wanting people to have fun, and they come to really celebrate something that they all have in common, and that camaraderie is there. And I think, you know, it's definitely exemplified through the staff and the volunteers that we have that continues to grow right now. I mean, we have another meeting this weekend, and I'm hearing that there's like 30 or 40 more people that want to come join the team. And I'm just like, you know, in some ways I'm very honored and very, very happy. I mean, one of the things that really made me think about continuing the event from this past year was at the end of the evening of the day, and, you know, and I didn't really even expect this, but, you know, a bunch of these attendees, you know, came up to me and a few of the other staff, and were just thanking us for putting this on, because and you know, I mean, they were so sincere, they had so much fun, and I personally, like, you know, they didn't know who I was. That it really moved me, and I kept thinking, you know what, there is something here, there's something very special, and, you know, this event should go on so that people can feel that there is a place for them to have fun, be themselves, and really, really, you know, come from a place of honesty, that they would enjoy themselves to the fullest without being judged, without, you know, fear. I mean, there was that one situation that's on YouTube that, you know, these stupid girls in a car down in Long Beach were, I think they were trying to egg some cosplayers, and then they ended up hitting a car or something like that, which I felt bad that, you know, number one, that they were doing that, but I also felt bad that they hit a car. I would never want anybody to get hurt. But, you know, I want to create a place where people don't have to be fearful of, you know, of things like that happening to them.
Yeah. All right. Well, those incidents are pretty low. at
well,
AX.
They're low, but you know what? To me, in my mind, just one is enough.
Right. Okay.
And you know, and I mean, I'm pretty. I mean, I'm not ancient. I'm not like the Crypt Keeper, but you know, I'm more of the older generation, and I see a lot of young individuals moving up and coming up and taking staff roles and volunteer roles, and you know, I see them as not only a part of my extended family, but my friends. Sometimes I even call them quote unquote my kids, because you know, I don't have children, but they're kind of like, you know, people I want to protect and take care of, and I want them to have something that is their own. I want them to have something that they can celebrate with. I want them to have something that they can enjoy with their friends.
Okay, so make the pitch. What's going to be at AM Squared that you can talk about that's supposed to be super exciting, that maybe, say, like a fan is saying, like, well, I can only do one of these events. Why would they go to AM Squared, aside from the whole thing where they don't have to pay an admission?
Well, you know, definitely, I think, you know, we're positioning ourselves in a different way. Not only is it free, we do have a lot of events. We also have panels and workshops, very similar to something, you know, I mean, granted that you cannot say that, you know, there's anything hugely different to some degree, but there are huge differences in my eyes. Number one, we have, you know, a huge deal in the works with Disneyland. Mm-hmm. For our attendees. Notice that we are only July 1st through the 3rd.
Right.
So, you know, you can figure out to some degree what I'm planning for this to happen for our
right.
attendees, which would be probably on the 4th.
Right.
You know, and, you know, we have a 24-hour arcade, we have dances, we have workshops, we have cosplay events. We're going to make our event very, very interactive, in which not only do attendees come and enjoy themselves, they can win prizes. They can go and, you know, win additional prizes. They can go and, you know, learn more about other events, other things, go to the exhibit hall to have fun with their friends, shop around. They can go and oh God, there's so many things I want to say, but I can't say because I have yet to announce it. But there'll be definitely something for everyone at AM Squared. There will definitely be things that you will not find at other conventions at AM Squared.
Okay, but are you doing the standard masquerade, anime music video contest, all that stuff?
I believe we have a masquerade. We are planning on something to be like an AMV. I don't know how much of it I can reveal. There's also additional things that I'm putting together that will be announced that will entice the budding filmmakers or writers and things like that, you know, animators. So there are a lot of things that I have in the works that we will be announcing that I hope will be enough to, you know, have people find out, you know, about and have them come over and enjoy themselves. You know, they have nothing to lose. I don't think, you know, it should just be fun.
Okay, man. Well, it'll be very interesting to see how this all plays out.
Well, you know, I mean, things happen for a reason, and you know, I mean, I've already told this to the staff and volunteers that, you know, we will do our best, and we can only hope for the best. But you know, if this is our one and only year to do a huge event, then, you know, we've tried it. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, well, you know, then it doesn't, you know, but we can just try. And at least there will not be any woulda, shoulda, couldas at this point.
Right. Okay. All right, man. Well, you know, thanks for filling me in on the details and explaining what exactly is sort of happening here. It's a very interesting thing to see happen. I'm sure Otakon is crossing your fingers that nobody tries this in Baltimore over the same weekend.
You never know. I mean, you know, honestly, like, I think, you know, this convention model really, you know, came from a place of honesty, honestly, to credit them, is to one of my favorite clients, Crunchyroll, honestly. You know, for them to come up with a freemium model for anime, you know, was brilliant. And to me, I kept thinking, why can't we apply this to the convention circuit?
So are you pulling any strings over at Crunchyroll to get them to come to AM Squared instead of AX?
You know, I personally keep it very separate to a certain degree.
I'm sure, I'm just messing
yeah,
around.
Yeah, honestly, I mean, it's like, they have to make their choice as business people too, and I have to respect them on right. that. Same thing with all my other clients. And, you know, hopefully they come over, you know, and we'll see. You know, I you can't force anybody in this world. I've learned that.
All right. Well, we'll see. We'll see you next summer. Okay, man. Well, thanks for coming on and talking to us and giving me the info. And I really appreciate it. And best of luck to you.
Thank you so much. And I hope to see you guys there. So thank you, guys.
Sure thing.
Thank you, Zach.
Okay, that's our show. I want to thank Chase for joining me. Don't forget to subscribe to us on iTunes, and we'll see you all next week.